Hello, gang. Dan here. Welcome in to this week's episode of Conversation Pit. Conversation Pit is a show where I interview people from around the gaming community, the streaming community, about what they do, what they create, what got them into this passion, and we go from there. It's a pretty standard interview show, really. This week, for the first episode of Conversation Pit, is my friend T. Morris. He's worked as a science fiction writer, publishing through Tor. He has done books, Twitch and Discord for Dummies. Discord for Dummies was the book that I tech edited on. T's a really sweet dude. I met him through Destiny, but he has shifted from video games to doing paranormal investigation. It's a really interesting episode. He even allows us to share a recording that he made at Gettysburg with you on the episode. So kind of fun. Quick note before we jump into the interview. Thank you so much to everybody who came through on Tuesday, March 19th to help me celebrate 2 years of Twitch partnership. It was a great day all around. It was so much fun. Thank you so much for supporting me, for supporting the channel, for supporting the work that I do. Congratulations to Bark Ruffalo, who won the Elgato Stream Deck Plus. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoy mine. Now, without any further ado, let's get into the pit. So you asked where we begin. T-Monster, why don't you tell the folks at home who you are, what you do on the internet, just to start.
So the name behind the T-Monster is T. Morris. I am a science fiction fantasy author. I'm a nonfiction author. I am a paranormal investigator now. I never thought those words would ever leave my lips. And I'm also a guy who creates words that makes Dan flinch. Words like web liberty.
Web liberty is probably the worst word I've ever heard in my life.
Okay. I wanted to challenge you on that because my wife found one yesterday that I'd never heard.
Okay.
Momtrepreneur.
Ugh. Why? Where are you going for these?
It's a dark hellhole called LinkedIn.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That
Momtrepreneur. I heard that one and I'm like, and I said, I'm going to make Dan have an aneurysm when I tell him that word, because even that made me flinch.
So gross. And anyways,
what else do I do on the internet? I am a podcaster as well.
Yes.
And because of paranormal investigation, I am now a video content creator. Again, words that I never thought would leave my lips on YouTube, which we actually reached partnership within 2 years. So I'm thrilled that went down the way it did. And that is the long and short of it. There are details in between, of course. And I'm also a proud member of Current Meta. That's how I know you, Dan.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say that video games, Destiny, and science fiction fantasy has opened up a lot of doors for me that I don't think would have opened up otherwise.
Yeah.
And it's something I'm eternally grateful for.
Well, I think that's... So, yeah, I know you from Destiny, and I know you from... We had that one night in Indianapolis.
It was a glorious...
Yeah.
And it was a glorious night in Indianapolis. Oh, no, we also had a night or two in the event formerly known as Guardian Con.
Oh, yeah, GCX. Yeah.
And I've been looking for a repeat of that, but it just seems like every time the event rolls around, it's like it's just not in the cards for me to go.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, another time. But you know, I always keep Gen Con in the back of my mind because I'm like, I know for a fact I'd like to go back to Gen Con.
Oh yeah.
I just have to figure out what capacity. And if not Gen Con, some other pop culture event. I do also know that that Indiana is a hot spot for paranormal locations.
Yeah.
And so, and it's, you know,
okay. So when I first met you, you played Destiny a lot. Mm-hmm. And then we worked together on the Discord for Dummies book, which I'm pretty sure was irrelevant the day that it was published.
It was irrelevant while I was going through approval phase. I just was like, I just want this project to be done.
Yeah. But then we worked on that together, and then that, like, we've both been on the streaming journey, and then like where I stuck with gaming, you've kind of taken this turn into paranormal investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So my question there is like, so what is kind of your history with that? Have you always been interested in the paranormal? Is it something like you've been like a science fiction writer in the past with like tour books on tour? But has the paranormal always excited you? Like, what's the origin?
Well, I remember when the Ghost Hunters first went live on Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
And that was literally on Sci-Fi, as in the Sci-Fi channel. And I remember having zero interest at that time in reality television. But this one intrigued me because I'm like, okay, let's see what kind of real life variety TV show. Let's see what Sci-Fi throws out here. Mm-hmm. And I remember that first episode and I'm like, okay, they're trying to shoehorn in paranormal investigation with real life reality TV. But when they concentrated on the investigation part, I'm like, there's actually something here.
Yeah.
And then things started happening on the show and I had a casual interest in the paranormal. And it comes from the fact of being a sci-fi guy. You know, I loved sci-fi back then and I dabbled in it. I've always been a nerd. You know, I still remember seeing the way my mom got Christmas shopping done in 77 and 78, where she would drop me off at a theater and I would literally stay in that theater. I would see Star Wars at least three times. And then, you know, the rule was, well, after the third time, come on back. And I'd come out and mom would be waiting for me and she'd be like, okay, let's go. I mean, it was a different time, obviously, but yeah. You know, it worked. And I've always been a nerd, but the thing about the paranormal was I was fascinated by it. And I also remember, I'm old enough to not only remember when the Ghost Hunters went live, I also remember when I first saw Ghost Adventures. And
which is more my, where yeah. I've kind of like gotten into it. Like exactly. I listened to Last Podcast on the Left, and Jenny and I during the pandemic started watching Ghost Adventures, which is more like Bro Dude Scooby-Doo.
It is.
It's exactly how I've been describing it anytime that I think about it.
And it's brilliant. It's Bro Dude Scooby-Doo, but it's the bad seasons of Bro Dude Scooby-Doo.
Oh, I mean, okay.
It's the bad seasons. It's not the really cool ones with Casey Kasem. It's like it's the ones where they tried to bring in guest stars in animation.
Oh,
and
okay.
When they did a pup called Scooby-Doo, you know, stuff and Scrappy-Doo. That's what that whenever I see Bro Dude Scooby-Doo, I go, this is Scooby-Doo in the Scrappy-Doo seasons. and yeah.
So what separates in your mind, like the adventures from the hunters?
Mm-hmm.
In that regard.
Well, that's real easy. There's a difference between paranormal investigation and paranormal entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ghost Hunters do paranormal investigation, but they make but the investigation itself is what's entertaining. You don't watch the Ghost Adventures to watch for something incredible, something jaw-dropping, or something to really challenge your thoughts. You're watching to see how hard Zach will scream at something. And again, it's also part of the reason why the Ghost Adventures are the worst investigators that's saying something, because there are a lot of terrible investigators on YouTube as well. But if you want to know what makes a terrible paranormal investigator, it's they see something and they run away from it.
Yeah.
That's what my...
They
that's
don't what run my toward the noise?
Means. Yes, exactly. We should be going towards the weirdness, not running away for it. It was one of the, if you remember way back with the Ghost Hunters, they had a situation like that happen. It was at the Eastern State Penitentiary, and it was this, the goofy character that you see in a lot of reality TV shows. And it was Brian, and he and a tech assistant, I think, were somewhere in one of the corridors of Eastern State Pen, and they saw something move.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, dude, run. And the two of them ran away from it. And Grant and Jason, rightfully so, gave him a dressing down. And they were, and I think it happened on the first season. They were like, what kind of a paranormal investigator are you? They tore into him. Mm. And then when the Ghost Adventures popped up, that's all they did was run away from stuff.
They're running room and to room. They're going, dude, bro. Like it's
dude, bro.
It's entertaining. It's entertaining to see, but it's not necessarily.
Right. It's, and I mean, another example, more modern example, I would say, is the difference between, like, I'm a big fan of of Call Me Chris and Selena's Spooky Boo.
Okay.
And over Halloween, they did a 4-part series on YouTube called Highway to Hell. And I reviewed it for Old Spirits, and I said it has promise, and I really hope they do it again. It wasn't perfect, but some of the stuff they did was pretty phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris, one of Chris's best buds in the YouTube realm, are Sam and Colby. Those guys are paranormal entertainers. Mm. I do not think they are terrific paranormal investigators. But much like with Zach, they've tapped a vein. They know how to tap the vein, and they make it entertaining for some people, not for me. And my argument is, I do believe paranormal investigations can be entertaining. It's like Drive to Survive versus actually watching Formula One.
Mm.
You don't need to add any drama to a sport that goes at almost 200 miles an hour and they make right angle turns.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, Netflix said, no, we need more drama. And that's why you get Drive to Survive.
Right.
So that's my summary of it.
So that's how you got into it. What was your, mm-hmm. What was your first steps into paranormal investigation?
And it starts with a game called Phasmophobia.
Okay.
During the pandemic, I get a call from my buddy, Phil Rossi. Mm-hmm. And Phil calls me up and says, T, there's a brand new game that came out and it's co-op. And I think you and I should play it. It's called Phasmophobia. We knew nothing about this game, and it was September 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So it had just come out.
Prime COVID and, times.
Oh yeah. We were deep into COVID at this point. And, I said, sure, let's give it a whirl. And I remember Pip said to me, like our studio's in the basement of our house, and Pip was on the top floor of the house. And she said, she heard me scream so loud, she thought I was on the top floor. I mean, I was absolutely losing my collective shit.
Mm-hmm.
I was a mess. And at the end of it, we said, okay, we're doing this again next week, right? And we played it on a weekly basis, and we brought in some more people. We called ourselves the Phil Rossi Scream Team. I was the one that was putting the scream in Scream Team, and we were loving it.
Mm-hmm.
So now fast forward to us starting to emerge out of the pandemic, you know, summer of 21. And Phil calls me up again, and he says, hey, T, I wanted to ask you a serious question. Just haven't had a chance to. Have you ever thought about doing this for real? And I said, doing what for real? And he said, you know, Phasmophobia, paranormal investigation. And I said, did you have a place in mind? And Phil not only had the place in mind, he had a reservation already made. He had the room reserved. He had the date. He had the time. All I had to do was say yes. And at this time, Phil was also doing his own paranormal podcast called Don't Turn Around.
Okay.
And a lot of people were telling him, a lot of the guests that he was had, because he's had a lifelong obsession with the paranormal, even predating Ghost Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And all these people were telling him, you've got the right instincts and you're in Virginia. You really should start exploring some of the areas around you. But he didn't want to do it alone because it's not as much fun. So he went on ahead and he said, well, let me see if T's on board. And we went to a place called Belgrove Plantation, just outside of Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful estate. We were coming in raw, you know, stars in our eyes. It was, I had one ghost gadget, which mm-hmm. didn't go off for the entirety of the weekend.
Which gadget, just in case people at home are taking notes.
The gadget in question, and in its defense, it didn't go off that weekend. But there have been several other weekends where it would not shut up.
Mm.
It's called the Flux 2, but we nicknamed it Simon because it sounds and looks like, whenever it gets triggered, it looks like that old school Simon video game where, it would beep and you would try to repeat the pattern.
Yeah, yeah.
So I nicknamed it Simon. But it's called the Flux 2. And I went in armed with, let's see, I had an H4N. Which was a Zoom digital audio recorder. I had a video camera, a cheap knockoff video camera, came out of China, I'm pretty sure. It did not last me 3 investigations. That's how dodgy it was.
Oh, okay.
And then there was the Flux. And and within the first 5 minutes, I'm wandering around the caretaker's house, and I remember reviewing the audio and I'm and video, and I'm listening, and I'm just going, I remember thinking very, very, very clearly thinking, I am wasting my time doing this.
Mm.
And within the first 5 minutes, I'm watching this video, walking through the caretaker's house, and I said, I'm new at this, so go gently with me. Clear as a bell, I heard her whisper, go, no.
Okay.
And I screamed out to my wife. She comes running down the stairs, thinking I twisted my ankle or something was wrong.
Right.
And she looks at me, and I just hand her the headphones, and I said, I want you to listen to something. I played the clip for her, and she heard it, and she looked at me. She says, what the hell was that? And then her head jerks back and goes, T, you need to listen a little longer. And as I went back and listened again, I said, I'm new at this, so go gently on me. I hear the no. And then a few moments later, I hear, get out. In the first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I have not looked back since. That's coming. It'll be 3 years this summer.
How many investigations has that 3 years made up?
Okay, so I want to say we have in coming up on 3 years, we have investigated at least 20 different properties.
Okay.
Two of the properties that we've investigated, probably by the time this drops, had never been investigated before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty neat feeling. And there was one property in particular, it had just opened up to the public. And from the looks of the episodes we've seen, we must have missed the ghost hunters by maybe a couple of weeks. But there is a place in Pennsylvania called Crescent SCI, the Crescent State Correctional Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And this place started off as a tuberculosis ward, and then it became a mental asylum when they had a cure for tuberculosis. And then in the 80s, in the wisdom of 80s government, the state of Pennsylvania said, you know what? We're going to save some money, and we're going to combine this mental asylum with a medium security prison. And we'll let the prisoners and the mental patients mingle among each other. Some really bad stuff went down there. And the place was shut down in 2013. And then fast forward about 10 years, and they, you know, after they'd shut it down, they were the owner said, you know, we're going to open this up and let people, you know, do some paranormal investigation. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the craziest nights I've ever had. Not the craziest, but one of the craziest nights I've ever had as a paranormal investigator. It was 12 hours. I had just turned 53. Mm-hmm. And I did all 12 hours like a mother effing rock star. And I walked out with my head held high. But the moment I got in the car, I passed out.
Right.
I didn't wake up until we were across the border in Virginia.
So in all of this, I guess. So I grew up fairly religious, right?
As did I.
Yeah. I grew up fairly religious. And so there's some notion of an afterlife, right? Mm-hmm. For you, what are you seeking out of all this? Like, do you believe that there's something on the other side of our life? Or do you feel like this is some sort of scientific phenomena that, like, can be explained?
Well, you see, that's the funny bit. This summer, I'm actually sitting down with a friend of mine who is a physicist and a noted skeptic. And we're going to actually do a podcast together called Spectres in Science.
Cool.
And the two of us are going to sit down. Dr. Pamela Gay is going to basically be the skeptic and the scientist. And I'm going to be the paranormal investigator. And the two of us are going to find some kind of middle ground, like an intersection between what I do and what she does. Because I do think there is something there. I mean, jokingly, Phil and I refer to each other as Mulder and Scully, and I'm Scully.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the hardened, even though I, and much like the character of Dana Scully, I'm, I have a Christian background. I believe, in the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. But as far as how this plays with my Christian beliefs and what I believe, I mean, yes, I do believe in the afterlife, but I'm also curious as to what that is containing. What kind of existence is it?
Mm.
And that's the personal aspect of it. I think that's a deep, deep personal pull about why I'm doing this. But I haven't proven anything. That's what I want to also make sure that I'm clear on, is that I am not proven beyond the shadow of a doubt that there is an afterlife or even that ghosts exist. But I do know that in the 3 years that I've been doing this, stuff has happened to me that I cannot explain.
Mm-hmm.
Just weird shit across the board. And what I'm getting out of this is not only what is that existence after we shuffle off this mortal coil? What is it like? Or is it more about, is what I'm experiencing, you know, is it intelligent, or are these just echoes of something that's already happened and it's been so traumatic, whether in a positive or a negative way, that it's left an impression here?
Mm-hmm.
That's the part that fascinates me, along with some of the history. And that's what we both agree on, me and Phil, is that what we try to do is we try to find out as much as we can about the history of the place so it doesn't go forgotten. And not just the history of a location, but the history of the people that were there. I think one of the best stories we have from the different investigations was we went to a place called the Candy Factory in Manassas, Virginia. And it's called the Candy Factory, still referred to as the Candy Factory, but it has been a lot of different things. And now it's a center for the performing arts.
Cool.
But they also have some stuff happening around there that they can't explain. Just, you know, feelings of being watched and, you know, hearing voices, stuff like that. Well, we were in, and one of the places that's the most haunted, and it's a reoccurring theme in some places, is the women's bathroom. For some reason, the women's bathroom is a hot spot. So we were in there with something called a portal. And the portal it's a spirit box, but running through a filter so that the static is taken out. Now, for the spirit box, what is a spirit box? It's basically a radio that is stuck on seek. It's cycling through all the different channels going. And the theory is that with that white noise of the static and everything, the spirits can come in, manipulate the radio waves and the points of the static, and they can get different words or phrases to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's cycling through, and then suddenly a radio station will come in. So it'll be like behind you, next to you, you know, that kind of thing, little phrases and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with the portal, what happens is you plug the spirit box into the portal, which Phil has figured out because Phil is a musician just like you. And he can, you know, he's got like wah-wah pedals and reverb, and he runs everything through that and he can take that signal out.
Yeah.
So now the only things that are popping out are just what you want to hear, just the phrases. And in the bathroom, we kept getting the name Edwin. Mm. We got it we have it documented. That's the other thing I'm a big stickler about too. If it isn't captured on audio or video, it's useless. I don't want to hear your story. I want to be told the story. Then when I'm investigating, I want to capture something on recordable media so that I can listen to it and try to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But we caught on video several times the name Edwin, at least 3 times on 2 different sources. So Pip, being our resident historian and, you know, the librarian that she is, she did some digging. And it was on Christmas Eve in 1928. 4 boys were joyriding through the city of Manassas, and their car got hit by a train that had come in.
Mm.
And their car got hit and dragged, and it stopped right next to the candy factory. And one of the kids in the car was named Edwin. Now, that's a lot of coincidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, to line up like that. And you know, I know I got plenty of friends who are skeptics, and God love them. But they will say, well, that's just coincidence. I'm like, it's a lot of coincidence to line up on that one name. And there have been other incidences like that. And it's just, that's the stuff that just keeps me coming back. Just keeps me coming back for more.
My next question was going to be like, how much research do you guys do before you go into a space? Do you try to go in like tabula rasa so that you can go in and have experiences and not have the history of the environment really influence your investigation, or do you find out as much as you can beforehand and kind of go from there?
Well, one of the lessons that I think I've learned in these baby steps into the paranormal is research is not a bad thing. When I started off, I used to say, I don't want to know a thing about the place, but then I didn't have a real way to make a connection, or I didn't have context to bring to the investigation. So then I was like, you know, maybe it's not a bad idea to have some facts, some names, some people. And one of the first places I think I did that was the candy factory. Mm-hmm. And by going into the candy factory with that, I felt like I was better prepared for what was there. But I didn't find out about Edwin until afterwards. Mm-hmm. But the other reason why I think research matters is, you know exactly what you're dealing with. I went to a location in Charleston, and this is actually our season premiere coming up in April. And
where can they view that?
Old Spirits Investigations on YouTube. You just go to just go to youtube.com. You go to Old Spirits Investigations, boom. And right now, Old Spirits Investigations.com leads to YouTube.
Cool.
We were in Charleston. And we were at an undisclosed location. We were asked not to reveal where the location was. Mm. And all we knew about it going in was that it used to sit in an area once called Maryville. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all we knew about it. And then at one time it was also the Hillsborough Plantation, and then it became the town of Maryville. That was all we knew going into it. And I wound up being, for the lack of a better term, I wound up being attacked while I was there.
Okay.
I went through some really intense physical pain that just came out of nowhere. And I hustled to get out of the house. And all this is caught on video. Mm-hmm. I hustled to get out of the house. The moment I was out of the house, I was fine. And while I know that, yeah, there is something to be said about the psychology of paranormal investigations, and you know, the human brain and the human mind can do a lot to a person and a lot to a body. That I totally accept. But I think part of the problem was I did not know the history of that place. Mm. What I had found out was that the town of Maryville was once upon a time a section of the Hillsborough Plantation. The Hillsborough Plantation had been divvied up after the American Civil War. And the African American enslaved turned that place into their own town called Maryville. Mm-hmm. And they were actually a very prosperous neighborhood. I mean, everybody was doing really well. It was thriving. And there were, you know, some people from the Charleston area, some more progressive, Caucasian people started coming over, and they started doing business with them. Started doing business with the town folk of Maryville, and the local government took umbrage with it. They did not care for this. Mm. But keep in mind, the two things that had happened before this were the white supremacist insurrection in Wilmington, North Carolina, just above them. Mm. That happened like 20 years prior. And then the Tulsa Massacre happened, this is around the 1930s, yep. Happened just only a few years prior to that as well. So the
and America South being what it is in its history of
yes.
being shitty toward anybody that isn't white.
Continue. Right. And what had happened was the South Carolina state government got involved, and they found a loophole and basically said, we're dissolving the town charter. And they did not give any reason. They just said, we're dissolving it. Hmm. And the town folk of Maryville fought it for 10 years. And then finally, they were just like, we can't do this anymore. So in 1935, this once thriving, prosperous town literally just got wiped off the map and became part of Charleston. Mm. And when you read up on the history of that and you put it in context of what happened in Tulsa and what happened in Wilmington, there's a lot of bad juju there. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know that going in. And so I really felt like that whatever was there, I triggered it. And it was only me. And since then I've been a stickler of, I want to know as much history. I want to know as much about not just the town, but about the surrounding property. I want to know what's going on there. And mm-hmm. especially with a state as old as Virginia, you've got a lot of history. You've got stuff involving Native Americans. You've got stuff involving both the American Revolutionary War, the American Civil War. And I think the more you know, the better equipped you are to deal with whatever is going to be there waiting for you.
So you mentioned that you were attacked. Like, what did that feel like? How did that manifest for you?
How it manifested was that I felt, at first it felt like just a slow, just like I'd been standing too long. You know, the lower part of your back starts to get a little tense. That's it. Mm-hmm. But where it started to feel like it was something more was that little tension just suddenly became like a stinging back pain. I don't have a bad back. I've got a very strong back. I've always have. But it felt like it was just a stinging pain, and it started working its way up my spine. It got into my shoulders, and I remember both Phil and we were with a couple of guest investigators, Boo and Zombie, the team formerly known as the Ghoulie Girls. They were all watching me, and they saw that my hand, and I was unaware of this, but my hands were balled up into really tight fists. And when I was editing the video, I saw my body posture. And at one point I just crossed my arms, and I looked like, it's like that stance you take with somebody that's bullying you. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it was. I mean, it was just, I just looked tense, and that's the only way I can describe it. It was a creeping tension in my back. And the weird thing was the night before Phil, myself and the Ghoulie Girls, we had all walked around the streets of Charleston, South Carolina. We had covered like at least, 10 blocks, and I was fine. Then I slept like a baby, woke up the next day. I mean, everything, I was my back, everything, I was perfectly fine. But in that moment, something just short circuited in my back, and I was in a lot of pain. And when Phil said, "You need to get out of here, T," you didn't have to tell me twice. I almost tore the door off the hinges getting out of the house, and bless them, the Ghoulie Girls recorded me outside of the house after I'd left, and I sounded fine. Mm-hmm. But I was obviously shaken, and I really felt like the owners of the house, the people that were in charge of this, which brings me to something else too about paranormal entertainment. Like any form of entertainment, there are people that know what they're doing and people that are just kind of making it up as they go. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, these people were the latter. They had a place, but I really don't think they knew the history of it. Mm. And the paranormal travel industry is a very lucrative industry.
Oh yeah.
People want to pay top dollar to go to a haunted house.
Yeah. So one of the things we did a couple of years back, we went to Asheville. And Jenny and I, just kind of on a whim, we decided to do like the walking ghost tour around town.
Yeah, those are always fun.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, almost always. Uh-oh. Okay, so...
talk to me, Hudson.
In Asheville, it was great because like the guy that we had, he was a history teacher. He had big gym energy and was really like into telling you about his town.
Okay, both, that's cool.
Like, the history of like the events and the people, mm-hmm. But also the more like spooky stories side of it, which Asheville is an incredible town to kind of mm-hmm. like walk around both at day and at night, just for anybody out there. I highly recommend that one. And then a couple for Jenny and I's anniversary, we went to Cincinnati, which I know a little gauche. But they had a ghost tour, and so we were kind of like, oh, you know what? This might be kind of interesting to go and check out. And we went, and it was pretty much like the person showed up a minute before it was supposed to start and was like, "Are you guys here for the tour?" And we were like, "Yeah." Oh, no. And it was pretty, they were pointing at houses and being like, "This house is old, weird, right?" And at one point she said that her friend was a witch and made a love potion for a guy in Florida, and now they call each other every week. And like stuff like that. So it's like, yeah. I think you get what you pay for in those circumstances, but that also could have just been a person that walked up to us and was like, "I can lead these people."
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, the sad thing about the paranormal is that there are, in my opinion, four types of people that you're going to meet. And they're going to be people like me and Phil and some of the people that we've had the pleasure of working with, which are, we met up with some great guys from West Virginia, the West Virginia Paranormal Investigations. Really nice guys. We've collaborated with them before. We would love to do it again. They're there for their own personal reasons, but you know, they try to go in with a very realistic look on things. Then you got the group B, and group B are the people that they're the gatekeepers. As they like to say, I was a paranormal investigator before it was cool to be a paranormal investigator. Right. And I'm like, I know you guys from the science fiction circles. We call you guys SMOFs, secret master or mistress of fandom. You know, the new Star Wars stuff sucks. New Star Trek sucks. Yeah. Okay.
Oh yeah.
So that's group B.
So gamers. Then you got group
gamers. Exactly. Yeah. And then you got group C, and group C are the Ghost Bros. Not the Ghost Brothers, because we love Marcus. We love Marcus. We love Juwan. We love those guys. But these are Ghost Bros, and we have dealt with Ghost Bros in the past. They're your Zach Baggins. They're your guys. Yeah. And yeah, it will be a cold day in hell if I ever work with any of these guys again, because when we realized they were Ghost Bros, we were like, oh no. And it was the longest night. We were at one of the scariest locations in Virginia, supposedly. And I felt nothing. I just wanted the night to end.
Right.
And I did, you know, Phil and I were so angry about that night. We haven't even looked at the video. There could be a full apparition of that video. We won't care, because we don't want to relive that night. It was that bad. Then there's the fourth group. And they're the ones who are like, yes, ghosts come to talk to me in my sleep, you know. And ghosts are, I think there are people that have a connection, but then there are people who take that connection and they run with it. And they lean so hard in, they are flat on their backs. And I'm like, you know, there's a fine line between the paranormal and mental health. And you know, when you start talking about love potions and you start talking about, casting hexes, I'm just like, okay. Oh, that's good. Good on you. And we will move on. And so that being said, I also know that there are people that we work with who are very good at knowing how to cleanse oneself and make sure nothing follows you home. Stuff like that. And this spirit worker was very upfront. She said, anything can be a talisman of protection. The trick is you got to believe in it. And that was such an honest to God answer. I'm like, yeah, this is why I like you. And so, sometimes you'll get in with these ghost tours that are just, you're like, you guys are making this up as you go. But the thing is, it is a very lucrative business.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Cincinnati got $35 a head off of Jenny and I that night for that.
I'll go you one better. There's a place that we visited at the end of August, and it was an incredible experience. And I found out that it was the mayor of Williamson, West Virginia. He owns the property. It was the old hospital on College Hill. And this place was nuts. That's like a rule. I don't look at evidence until I'm ready to start working on the actual episode. Sorry, not evidence, footage. I'm trying to break one of my bad habits. At one time I called the video and audio I had evidence, and I'm like, well, it's not evidence until I check it.
Yeah.
So let's go with footage. And I don't review footage until I'm getting ready to work on that episode. But we were having a conversation with the guy who was with the old hospital, and I found out he was the mayor of Williamson. And Williamson is one of those towns you would expect to see in West Virginia. It was one time a coal mecca, and now it's not, and it's feeling that. But it's a beautiful little town in the valley of West Virginia. And he said, yeah, we're just trying to figure out how to tap into this. And he said, if there's one place I would love to see somebody, purchase, it's this place called the Mountaineer. And I said, where's that? And he goes, well, it's on Main Street and it's the hotel. And at its, in its heyday, you know, everybody from FDR to Marilyn Monroe had stayed at the Mountaineer.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove by it. And as Phil Rossi said, we looked into the lobby and that's when I got my first paranormal boner because, okay. because the lobby, I kid you not, the lobby looked like it was straight off the set of The Shining.
Oh, okay.
It had that Overlook Hotel vibe. And I said to Pip, I said, if we had that disposable income in a heartbeat, I'd buy this place and then we'd figure out some way to turn it into a weekend in Williamson. Mm-hmm. But that's how lucrative the paranormal travel industry has become. It's a funny thing, but yeah, it's a thing. It's still a thing.
Yeah. What are some of like the spots, like bucket list spots for you that you that you'd like to go and check out? Or like,
I'll give my top three at the top of the list, bar none. The top of the list is the Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay. Why is that?
I remember first seeing it on Ghost Hunters. I'd never, you know, obviously, you know, they went to all these different places, but when I saw Waverly, I was like, okay, this place is calling to me. It's one of those. It was one of the. It was again tuberculosis ward that became a mental asylum. They have a death chute. They've got all kinds of crazy stuff that happens there, and so many. I mean, all the big names have been there. Mm-hmm. Even the Ghost Bro Scooby Doos, they've been there as well. Mm. Everyone's been there and everyone's had their own unique experience there, which I think is really interesting. And people still go there. There are some groups that have gone there 3-4 times. And every time they come back, it's like, I can't explain that place. Mm. So that is definitely one place that's on my bucket list. The St. Augustine Lighthouse, and pretty much any lighthouse but the St. Augustine is also high on my list. And that's one down in Florida. Mm-hmm. Again, saw it on the Ghost Hunters. And one of the things about it that they still talk about to this day, and I remember watching it and doing the thing with my video where I back it up and replay it, back it up frame by frame just to try to figure out what that was. But they captured on video a shadow that started 2 flights down a spiral staircase, went up 2 flights, and then literally bent over and looked over the banister.
Mm.
And that was absolutely fascinating to watch. And St. Augustine, but any lighthouse for that measure, I've always wanted to do an investigation of a lighthouse. And I think it's just the beachcomber in me.
Mm.
And if I had one last place on the bucket list, ironically, it's a place that my wife took me to before I got into paranormal investigation, before she got into it, because she does it with me. But it was a place in New Zealand. It's called the Chateau. And I jokingly said, oh, this is basically the New Zealand version of The Shining, but it's just nicer ghosts. And because it does, you walked in and it looked like the Overlook Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at the base of Mount Ruapehu, a beautiful spot. And I heard that they've closed it down, that, you know, it's no longer open to the public. There are people that are whispering about getting it, you know, buying it and opening it up again. But I remember one, it was a really nice hotel, but I also remember walking around it and just thinking, I feel like there are 1,000 eyes on me.
Mm.
And I just had this really bad, not bad vibe, but just a vibe about the place. And then we went down into the basement because that was where the pool was. And I could not have gotten out of that basement faster. And it, yeah. So I would say those are my top 3 spots in the world right now. But I'm always, as I like to tell people, yeah, I'm always open to find out, you know, new places to go or places like that. There are some places that I have no desire to go to where, whatever, the Amityville House.
Oh,
Amityville House.
Okay.
That's pretty much anything that has the taint of the Warrens on it. I'm not a big fan of the Warrens. I'm not a big supporter of the Warren cinematic universe. And it's a shame because I like both those actors, but I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. But Yeah, like the Amityville house, I honestly think that's sus as hell, that entire Amityville horror story. Bobby Mackey's, the original Bobby Mackey's, again, you know, they talk about how haunted the place is. I'm like, is it really?
That was what our Cincinnati tour guide was like. If you guys are around, go to Bobby Mackey's.
Yeah. It's a very, everybody loves to throw it around. Oh, Bobby Mackey's, you got to go to Bobby Mackey's. And even, you know, even when Jack Osborne and Katrina Weidman went there with Portals to Hell, even they were like, they were kind of indifferent about it. Unlike Trans-Allegheny. Now, that's another one I should put on my list, because on the way back from the old hospital, we took a detour and just poked our heads in at the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. And that place instantly shot up on my list, because I'd seen Jack and Katrina investigate it. I saw Selena and Chris investigate it. And I said, yeah, this is a place I want to hit. But yeah, Bobby Mackey's not on that list. Amityville, not on that list. Conjuring House, not on that list. Not on that list at all.
Is it on the list like in the same vein of the Amityville house, or is it like something different? It's both.
Okay. It's because I think that, first off, one, all the investigations I've seen of the Conjuring House have been kind of lackluster. That's problem number one. Problem number two is, yeah, I watched some of the shenanigans that went down last Halloween with Sam and Colby and Satori and Cody, and I just said,
for somebody who doesn't know, Sam and Colby, like what was the situation there?
So what happened was Sam and Colby went to the Conjuring House, and they basically kicked off this week of paranormal investigations of the Conjuring House with an evening with Satori and Cody. And the significance of Satori and Cody is that Satori is Jason Hawes's daughter. Jason Hawes is one of the guys of the Ghost Hunters. He's one of the founders. And Satori claimed that she and Cody had this special gift. And the gift is that, they link hands, and they did it on the Ghost Hunters show in the past couple of seasons. And it would just be, in my opinion, an exercise in tedium. It just, they basically stand there. And then she says, is anybody here with us? And suddenly you'd hear a soft knock. And then she would start reciting the alphabet, like kind of like a human Ouija board. And when she hit the right answer or the right letter, you'd hear a knock. Well, now it's reached a point where they're now doing their own thing together. And they're exclusively at the Conjuring House, and they link arms. They say, we invite any spirits to come in here, and you'll actually hear somebody walk into the room. That's how loud these knocks are. Well, the thing that was getting a little weird about it, though, now is they had what was there was claiming to be the spirits that were related to Sam and Colby. And they had all this information that they had never imparted. And people were like, well, wait a second. They started digging, and they found out that a lot of the answers they were giving, that Satori and Cody were giving to Sam and Colby, was all found easily on the internet. And
so it was the classic kind of like huckster.
It was actually started by somebody called the Fox Sisters. The Fox Sisters had this thing with their joints and their ligaments and something. It's like cracking knuckles, but they could do it on command with their feet.
So it just seems like there's shenanigans.
Shenanigans. So
back to the Conjuring House. That's a place you wouldn't want to go, kind of because of its history of that.
Even if they paid me, no.
Yeah.
Even if they paid me, no. Because now they're getting YouTubers that are just doing, it's like candid camera on meth. You know, it's completely unhinged. And of course, the people that are running the Conjuring House, they're not complaining because they're getting paid for it. So I don't feel, even if it changed hands, I probably wouldn't go. I probably would not go. There are just places. And the other thing that I want to make sure of too, when I go to a place, is, like, again, whether it's the Conjuring House, whether it's Bobby Mackey's or otherwise, everybody has a great ghost story. But I'm like, can you show me some documentation?
Mm-hmm.
Can you show me some news articles? Can you show me some hard facts about what happened here, whether it's a death, whether it's a murder, whether it is a suicide? And that's, you know, when people say, well, they just didn't record it. And I'm like, are you kidding? If you ever read newspapers from the 19th and early 20th century, you know, it will say, you know, George Pimple from, you know, Hackensaw, Michigan, came in and spent a day in town. Mm-hmm. He went over to the soda shop, and he also picked up a $5 bottle of pop. You know, it's like they documented everything.
I listened to a podcast called The Dollop, and lately they've been doing shows called The Pastimes, where they grab an old newspaper and just read through the stories of the day.
Yeah.
It's pretty much exactly what you're describing. Just like,
and if you're telling
they didn't have television,
okay,
clearly.
Right. Clearly. And, you know, I mean, that was the whole concept of News of the World. You know, Tom Hanks played this guy that would literally go from town to town and he would read the newspaper. And you're telling me that, okay, so they're going to document George Pimple's visit to town, but down the road, you're burying bodies in your backyard, and you got a mass murder and suicide, and you're not going to report that?
Mm-hmm.
What, out of decency? No, that sells. Even back then, that sold papers. I mean, and you go, well, proof you got of that. You know, what's the story? Oh, God. I'm blanking on her name now. And I would stay at her home. It was, she killed her dad with 40 wax. I'm blanking on the name.
Oh, Borden.
Borden. Lizzie Borden. Man, that was the crime of the century.
Mm-hmm.
And she was acquitted. And I've had very noted skeptical paranormal friends stay at the Lizzie Borden house. And they go, two things about the Lizzie Borden house. One, I'm glad I'm staying there. Two, I'm never doing it again.
Okay.
But yeah, it's, you know, that kind of news was still news even back then. Mm-hmm. So why isn't it somewhere? It's got to be somewhere. So yeah, history or it didn't happen.
Right. What is the most compelling piece of footage, documentation that you've found or that you found in your
So if I play adventures. Something, so if I play something on here, you should be able to hear it, right?
I should be able to hear it. Yeah. Right. If it's wired through like your soundboard is.
Yeah, it should. Well, I mean, you can hear this, right? You can hear that. So, mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then let me see if I can pull this up. So, trust me, it'll be worth it, because this is the way that Pip and I described this is, this is the gold standard. This is cool. The one that that we play for people all the time, and it's.
So where did this come from?
Yes, the location that keeps on giving, Gettysburg. And this is my proof that, you know, we weren't even trying and this happened. And I watched Zach Baggins, stumble through a weekend in Gettysburg, and he found nothing. And I'm like, he is the worst investigator ever, because, you know, Gettysburg is the gift that keeps on giving. Why it's like that, I don't know. But so let me set this up for you. And if you want to play it and then, you know, have you listen to it, play it, and then we have something, a reference to
okay.
talk about.
Then I'll count down, I'll listen to it.
Okay.
And then tell you when it's done. And then you give me
it's only 40 seconds, so we should be good.
Yeah. All right. So 3, 2, 1.
So we're about to leave. If you want to say anything, now would be a good time. If you are here, give us a sign. Speak with us, please.
Anyone from the Army of the Potomac? Is here?
Was that like right around the 30-second mark?
It was around the 30. It's between the 30 and four and final mark. So you're looking at the last 10 seconds. Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah. Exactly.
Is that your is that a box or is that just was that like in plain air?
That was in plain air, and I heard nothing at the time. And here's the setup. We're walking away from Cemetery Ridge, and the battle was so fierce at Cemetery Ridge, you could walk across Gettysburg, and you'll see random markers. It's basically where they found dead bodies.
Mm.
And we're walking by a marker for the Army of the Potomac, and we're heading to, you know, I can see my car. We're heading towards the car. I have the thing. I have the H4 running, and Pip is a few, as you can hear, Pip is a few feet ahead of me, and I say what I say. There's nobody else around us, and Pip said, "Anyone from the Army of the Potomac?" It was dead quiet. We get home, and I listen to the clip, and that's when I picked it up. Mm. All I did to that clip was boost the audio. That's it. I just boosted the audio at the end just to make sure you don't miss it.
Yeah, I heard some gain there.
Yeah. It was a brand new card, so it wasn't an artifact. I know my audio. This was a brand new card we had in the H4N. And that H4N I had had for, you know, well over a decade. I had recorded countless podcasts on that thing. So I knew that I know the equipment. And that voice popped when we heard it. And Pip, who up to this point, Pip was more like, well, you know, gets tea out of the house, it's fine, and everything like that.
Yeah.
She heard that and she said, "I didn't tell you this to you, but I lost sleep for 3 nights because I kept asking myself, what was that?"
Mm.
She was trying desperately to explain to herself, what was that? And that that voice, every time we go to Gettysburg, we always go back to that spot just to see if we get it another time. But it was the first time we'd ever picked up a voice that had tone, that had inflection, that wasn't a whisper.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that EVP, electronic voice phenomenon, that EVP is just, that's the gold standard. We always say, well, on a scale of one to Gettysburg, how does that measure up? And we've gotten some really crazy stuff in the past too. You know, whispers of turnaround, some of the stuff I've caught on stream. Now, that has also been fun. I have been streaming the investigations live.
I remember you starting to do that, and then more recently you've been doing the edits, or not edits per se, like, well, just footage review.
Yeah. And that's been great. And that's been great because it's actually helped me. It's helped me really step up the production value and production schedule. But the live streams are a lot of fun. And on our recent live stream, somebody heard a sigh in real time, caught it. But one of the coolest things we had happen on the live stream, we've actually had it happen twice now. We were setting up, and you actually see the clip in my hype reel when I'm getting ready to go live.
Mm-hmm.
But it was at Linville Manor, and we're getting set up in this one study. We're getting set up. We're putting equipment out, and and there's at least four of us in the room, but we're off camera. Phil leaves the room and clearly recorded on two different devices, but clearly we caught a voice from the back end of from the other side of the house call out, "Mom." And not only did we hear it in real time and react to it, but chat heard it as well.
Mm.
And that's been fun because the way I try to set up our investigations when we go live is I want people to experience what I'm experiencing. I want them to be a part of it. And it really has challenged me in the ways of, okay, how do we do this live and, you know, on location versus being in a studio? And that's been a challenge. It has definitely been a challenge. Some streams have worked out better than others. And every time I go, I'm just like crossing my fingers going, let's have good Wi-Fi. Let's have good Wi-Fi. And we'll see if it works.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I guess, so my last question for you and all of this, if somebody were to start out, what is like one big piece of advice that you'd give for them on this paranormal journey?
Wow. I would say go in with the right intention. I mean, for us, for me and Phil, it's about understanding the history and staying respectful about it, and trying to find out people's stories. Phil's a writer, I'm a writer, so that's what I feel like we're focusing on, is the story aspect of the people involved and what they want people to remember them for. If you go in with intention, with the right intention, I think that's going to make this a much more positive experience for you. If you're going in to discover, you know, to prove that ghosts are real, I mean, you know, great, but I don't think that is the, I don't think it's like, if someone were to say to me, I want to get into paranormal investigation because I want to prove that ghosts are real, I'm going to be like, you know what? You should also become a streamer, because you're going to be the next ninja. Or you're going to be the next Dr. Lupo, or you're going to be the next, the next Kai Cent. Because to me, that's going in with the wrong intention. If you are going into this for a thrill, if you want to be the next Zach Baggins, or, you know, the next thrill seeking, paranormal troupe, then I'm like, okay, but I don't think it's going to be what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
It really is about intention. And if your intention is to discover something that you didn't know previously, whether it is in history or whether it's in your understanding of how the world works, you know, you might have a rough ride ahead of you. That's why I had so much fun with this, because I went in with the expectation of, you know what, I'm just going to enjoy this experience and see where it leads. And it has been an incredibly fun ride. It's been crazy good fun. And I'm just excited to see where we're headed next.
Thank you so much for being on the show, man. Where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, man. The best place to find me, if you don't find me over on YouTube under Spirits Investigations, you can always go to twitch.tv/TheTMonster. And I start my week and I end my week with at least one video game. At the time of this recording, I just started Jedi Survivor.
Fun.
And I'm already just like, oh yeah, this, I really enjoyed Fallen Order. This is going to be fun. And then of course, at the end of the week, you know, I got to get my Destiny in, and I do. And then in between, we have everything from footage review to playing Ghostbusters with the wife, you know, because that's on brand.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Tuesdays, we started up this thing that I never thought I would ever do, but it turns out I'm really having a good time with it. It's called the Grim Gazette.
Okay.
And the first section of the Grim Gazette is I basically share weird news stories. Whether it's, you know, government says the UFOs do exist, or you know, man finds lost silent film at an auction, pays $20 for it, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, I do weird news in the first half of it, and then in the second half, if I've seen something on another ghost show, I'll go back and I'll analyze it, and I'll in some cases I'll debunk it. And in some cases, I'll be like, no, that actually is defining reality. That's interesting. And then somewhere in between, if people get me clips from paranormal TikTok or clips from YouTube Shorts or Instagram, I'll look at those and give my two cents and tell them, okay, let's analyze this and let's look at it and see if we can debunk it, or if we can prove it true, you know, that kind of thing. So that's on Tuesdays. So Twitch or YouTube, those are the best places to find me.
My name's Dan. You can find me on the Twitter and the Instagram and the TikTok for now, at DanFinityGG. You can also find me on Twitch 3 days a week, helping guardians and trying to make you laugh. If you'd like to support the show, remember to rate and review on your podcast platform of choice. Anything you say helps us in the algorithm. And if you'd like to give a few bucks a month, head on over to ko-fi.com. That is ko-fi.com/DanFinity. All the links will be in the notes for the show. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you find what you're grinding for.